Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Start to this part, this second part.
We've already got out the pre-episode
sillies. We got out all of the first episode sillies. That being said, hello everyone, welcome back to the second part of our season four halftime mid-season Q&A discussion question. All those words.
Extravaganza.
There we go. Welcome back. We covered a lot of topics in part one, and we were going to keep the story stuff mostly to that, but we had so much discussion, we had so many things to say that it's rolling over into this episode. And so now we're going to start off talking about everyone's favorite NPC, Craig, because Mills was teasing stuff about him, and we love him so much. And we want to talk about him some more. But before we start talking, I do want to remind you, we have an announcement, an important announcement at the end of this episode. So I urge everyone to listen all the way through so we can get some information to y'all. So without further ado, Craig. Mel, tell me about Craig.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you about Craig. I've been talking about Craig all day.
I've been dying to talk to you about Craig.
Sorry, I almost went into the Pepe Silvia monologue. Every day, Craig's mail is getting sent back to me, Craig, I have it in the mail. This whole box is full of Craig. Sorry. Okay, so here's the deal about Craig. Well, I gotta, adjust my seating so I can be properly.
That's gonna be,
perched.
A TV show title. Here's the deal with Craig. Here's the deal about Craig.
Everybody loves Craig. Everybody hates Craig. Craig in the middle. Okay.
2.5 Craigs.
Craig. His name's not even Craig.
I know. I was thinking about this just a second ago. I totally forgot. Part of me feels like I am responsible for Craig in a way I never wanted, because I gave this dude his name that he uses now. An offhanded comment about this evil crown that I stole from the Lich that was probably harmless turned into his whole story arc.
This is probably harmless.
Let's pan back and look at this from a top-down view. Earlier in the first part, I answered a question about how, is this where, I expected you guys to be, and have you guys been, doing the story? So, when I DM, I have bits... When I DM, I have pieces of information and lore and things that are happening in the world that the players are interacting with. How the players find and mesh with this information is constantly in flux, which means, did I plan Craig specifically, this person who they rescued to be this other thing? As soon as they rescued him, yeah. There were several... Craig fulfills a narrative function that was, in essence, assigned to this character. There were points when we were playing where, Rob, you specifically were I can't engage with someone who's constantly stonewalling and that sort of thing. And I was like, good point. I will, we will get to that point. I will make sure you're not just constantly, being shit-talked by a 13-year-old. He's not 13. But,
that's how it feels like sometimes from Lash. I can't hit you because it's abuse, but it's bullying me and I don't like it.
Which is to say that if you guys had like taken Craig with you and refused to let him join you on your exploits, like the character of Craig would have had that same significance and that same build, and a lot of this stuff would just be happening elsewhere and revisiting. And then there would have been something else for your stories for you to engage with. So it's not that, like, it's not that Craig only exists around you, but bringing Craig with you allows you to get insights into things you might otherwise not have. And if you didn't have Craig and maybe you had someone else, that would have given it a different tone and tinge too, because Craig has a very specific role in this narrative, as I think your characters are starting to find out. Part of the reason, why did he even want to stay with you guys in the first place? Very clearly doesn't like you. There's a lot of different things at play there. But yeah, Craig was always going to be an important NPC, but Craig was not necessarily guaranteed to be a part of the party, if that makes sense.
How wild would it be to find out, like, the last episode of the season, Craig's like, it's like the big reveal, and it's like, oh yeah, my name's not Craig, my name is Daniel, and it's like totally flat. Just like, yeah,
I said Craig's name once, and I don't know if, I think Han was the only one who's paying attention because I asked you to cut it out.
Oh,
like early on.
Oh yeah, you said his real name. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I got you.
It is not Daniel.
I was just, I just followed your instructions and edited that memory out of my brain.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was. I don't remember it.
Craig's name is cool as shit, I think. I think you're going to hear it.
Craig, yeah.
Craig, that's the thing though, is Craig is a great name. It's a cool, a strong name. But
especially with a K.
Especially with the K, I just think that when you hear Craig's actual name, you're going to be like, ah, shit, that is also cool. Like, that is also a good name.
If it is cool, I can guarantee Magnus's reaction is going to be like, well, that's way better than Craig. Why have you been letting us do this whole time? But I'm sure there's a reason. I bet he's like a secret. He's like a secret, tiefling prince promised to bring balance to the Force and...
Yeah.
It's so funny, specifically you mentioning the crown, because you ever, like, as a DM, you're like, okay, here's an NPC, here's their whole deal, and like, this is what they're about, and then a player does something, and you're like, you know, it'd be funny. Like, it just expedited some stuff in a very particular way that I was like, you know what, I wasn't planning on this, but yeah, that's how this is happening now.
We can move off of Craig in a second. It's also funny to me in retrospect, you know, like having confirmed that Craig is like the main character, and the way I sort of interpret that is like, you know, we mentioned at the end of the last episode, that means that we're almost guaranteed to die because we are the mentor figures. Like, we are like the Gandalfs, like, you know, the Boromirs, like the people that are passing the torch to Craig and Julian and whoever else is in our life that we're, you know, like connected too. But it's very funny in retrospect some of the interactions where we have, where it's like clearly it was important for us to be at the house of a Nemeros, and Craig had a whole other important side quest that was just his, and Magnus is sort of like, was it cool to be here? Like, you're obviously important, I have no idea what you're going through. But it's sort of just like the dissonance of like, we are on like our main quest and Craig is also experiencing some wild shit, I'm sure, and like, it just sort of doesn't connect yet, like, how they're, like, what he's doing. And so it's funny to think about the wild shit he must be getting up to.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's fun for me because I do think about it. And I think, and, like, it puts me in an interesting perspective. And I think it's an interesting vehicle for storytelling because, like I said, it's, like, main character shit going on there. And it does, in a way, it does impact your story. It matters. But also, it's not really relevant to the story we're telling here. Because the story we're telling here is about your characters and your emotions and your relationships. And whatever is going on with Craig is as relevant as any other lore dump or geopolitical thing happening. It's just happening 100 yards to the left on someone else's little vision journey rather than on the other side of the planet. But I like to make attention to that. There's other shit going on and other people are, you know, having their big adventures at varying scales. Even if they're not on your scale, on other continents, on other planes, there's always stuff happening. And I feel like Craig is just like a reminder that you can be the main characters without being the main characters. But yeah, it's fun.
Now,
our quest is just the recruitment quest that Craig has to participate in to recruit Julie into his main campaign.
Believe it or not, you guys are Craig's NPC escort.
So I do want to answer this question. That is a little bit of a jab at Brennan, but it's all in good fun and love here. Is Craig just better Giuseppe? Also, the rest of this says, also, did you have the idea for him to be important to the plot from the start, or have you just been making it up as you go? This season feels like one giant interconnected mystery, and I could not imagine trying to have such an important NPC and just hoping it works out. Which you answered a little bit already. Craig was always going to be here.
Craig was always going to be here, whether or not you guys were going to know anything about Craig or interact with Craig. If you guys didn't keep him with you, and obviously as a DM, I was like, you know, this bitch who hates you is wanting to also go with you for some reason. At first, you kind of didn't give him a choice, but then blah, 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 blah. But like, otherwise it would have been like, remember that kid you let go? Here's him now. What?
And I feel like a big difference with Giuseppe, like it in big contrast to everything you just said, Giuseppe was the main character, but also that was the main point of the story. He was like the thing that we needed to like figure out. For Craig, he is still the main character, but as you said, he's doing his own thing. And also we were not forced to take him with us like we were with Giuseppe. We're like, God damn, we have to take this fucking guy with us. Shit.
And honestly, it brings a whole different dynamic in. The fun thing about playing Giuseppe, for at least for me, was the fact that he was always kind of in the way, but you still needed him, you know? And because he was the key to something. And it's fun, the difference when Craig is, you know, I feel like Craig is more powerful and more important in his own right. Not because of because the thing about Giuseppe is a little insufferable. His dad's the rich guy, and he's important because he's important, and you have to deal with him. And it had a lot of party dynamics where sometimes the biggest menace isn't the sea creature that's eating your ship. It's the fucking 19-year-old who you want to cast overboard.
In retrospect, one thing I love about Giuseppe is that that campaign was so anti-royalist that even when we had our own, like, devil that you know, prince of the, you know, Vodachian Empire, we're still like, fuck this guy and his rich dad. Like,
And another I think distinction between like Craig and Giuseppe is like Giuseppe was a fully grown man. Like Giuseppe was like kind of an idiot, but like was an adult, that sort of thing. And like Sinead was like a child and we're all like the party was pretty like young and things. But in this dynamic, it's like very clear that you all are adults and Craig is notably younger, and like Craig's friendship with Julian, really, even though Craig can be this like very important figure who is clearly has some kind of power or ability and is relevant in some particular way, Craig is also like still a kid, you know? And so like that dynamic, I think if we were looking at this from another perspective, Craig could do these things without you in the same way you could do what you're doing without Craig. But I don't know if either of you would really be better off for it.
It's sort of better for everyone that Greg is at least vaguely supervised by us, or at least has friends that aren't actively evil.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
Have we
also a matter of perspective, because we're kind of the baddies, but, you know.
Have we said how old Craig is?
Have we?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I don't know. I don't think I have now.
I have no idea how old Greg is.
He's secretly like thousands of years old, probably.
Yeah, classic.
Cool.
I think Craig's probably a year or two younger than Julian.
How old's Julian?
I don't remember specifically off it. 19?
19 or 20-ish, yeah.
That okay, I thought 19 or 20-ish, yeah.
All right, so I have a question for you, Mills.
Yeah.
With how much agency you've given to us to design the world somewhat around our characters, like where our hometowns are, what they're like, the circumstances in which we left, things like, you know, which god they worship in the region. Like, you've left a lot of this to our discretion. My question for you is, have you sort of been using this campaign as a way for us to organically build out the world for future campaigns? Or what is your relationship with lore building in that sense when you give us this much to work with?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one central part to how I play TTRPGs and like TTRPG, what's the word? Conceptualizing is the like collaborative storytelling aspect. So like, I didn't explicitly say like, here are the parts of the world that you get to write about. But each of you sort of had a different kind of element that you were focused on and focused in your character's backstory. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, where a character comes from and the environment that they live in is just as important as anything you write down on a page about who that character is like the environment that produces them. And what they interact with and how they view the world and what if that is viewed in reality, what if that is viewed in their perspective, and trying to like find those middle grounds. So like the short answer is that the lore that people built, like Han has done a lot of shaping out Ulfair. Brennan has a lot of lore structuring around like the Church of Furia that's really impacted how that works. And that and you know, that has a lot of butterfly effects, and Magnus has had a big hand in like how magic works. Like what is power scaling? When you have a character who wants to create a central or a system of like wizarding and magical education, again, there's like a lot of butterfly effects within it, because then what that asks is, why isn't there this? And why is something that Magnus experienced in his hometown, is that something that is the same or different from other areas, and why? And also Magnus has a very big hand in Jorgund and like how he's experienced, how he moves with the world. And so I give like a few sentences or like a paragraph about this god. And then it's like, okay, well, here's all of the ways that I interact with a god. And then for me, it's trying to figure out, okay, is that the rule or the exception for how gods work, for how this god interacts with their followers, for how these gods interact with their players? Is the city that Magnus grew up in the rule or the exception? And in some cases, you guys brought up lore that was like different than what I had imagined. And I was just like, and I just kind of threw away what I wanted. And then other times you came up with lore that was different than what I imagined. I was like, this is great. Actually, I'm stealing that. And it's not stealing because I asked you for it and you gave it to me. But I think, and also, like, this world is set up in specific epochs, and there's that sort of cyclical thing. Like, I want to keep building and arranging content that can exist and stories within this framework. So it's like, you know, if I need to, a Jorgen from a previous epoch might have interfaced differently than this Jorgen, but I also want to, like, respect that lore. You know, it'd really suck if Magnus had this backstory that was like, I'm living in a city that's being held by this oppressive like theocracy that's fascist and awful, and it was just that, and nowhere else in the world lined up or meshed with that at all. And so it's like trying to create, well, I don't want everywhere in the world to be like this, but I need that place to make sense, and I need that to relate to the story, and I need it to feel natural and real, so Magnus as a character has a real and valid connection to all of the other things happening in the world. And like other things with like the Church of Furia kind of being this very rigid hierarchical structure that's like similar to Catholicism, but different. And then being like, how do those things develop? How does a society create that? And what does that say about the society? What does that say about the people? What does that say about the gods, too, that you have these beings of immense power who relate in these functions? And so I think every time a player writes a line of their backstory or writes a line of lore for the world, it really just adds several more questions that allows me as a GM to flesh out other things. And like, how do you make these things work? Because nothing is ever a clear one-to-one ratio. And then I also mentioned to Rob earlier, like, I only plan on changing lore in between things in the same way that I change lore for myself, which is when I realize I've contradicted myself somewhere and you gotta like make it make sense. But yeah, I consider the things that happen in this arc to be as canon as is relevant to a story. And then there's a whole conversation about what does it mean for things to be canon and breaking canon and like fan content and like personal stories and all that and the hierarchy and sharing in a blah, 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 blah. But yeah, so that was that answer.
Yeah. It's interesting to have a green light like that as a player sometimes to be able to collaborate in such a free way, because I feel like a lot of stories that get told, especially, well, obviously in like module content, it's like you get zero freedom to do that basically. But even in just like standard D&D settings, it can be tough where it's like, you know, do I have to be a life cleric if I worship a certain god, or is this like not the right vibe that I have here with like the pre-writ lore? And so having the ability to personalize it is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most effective ways of storytelling, because, you know, one person can only know what they know. So whenever you get different perspectives on how something might work or how something could work within a story, that's how you make it believable and make it have depth in three dimensions. And yeah, go ahead.
Oh, if I can add another thing. I know I've been just talking so much this whole time.
Go for it. Everyone loves to hear you talk. It's good.
I think another thing, especially in a homebrew world, from a perspective of player buy-in, unlike, you know, Star Wars, where all of us have varying familiarities with the lore, or like D&D, where we've played or we've seen things that have familiarity, like the lore here you can enjoy reading it, but it is just homework. Like, it is entirely new. It's just stuff that came up in my mind. So I think it's nice to also have, like, give you guys the ability to be an expert in something and know that and own that knowledge. So you have, like, you feel ownership in that part of the story rather than just being given a bunch of stuff that I thought was cool and then being like, okay, I'll fit somewhere in here. I think anytime, even if you're running a module and like changing parts of it, or like anytime GMs, if you have the opportunity to give players things, everyone likes writing lore. Everyone likes learning about lore. And I think it's a cool back and forth when you guys give me something and I'm like, okay, you know what this is, but you don't know how this relates to everything else. Let me share it with you.
Yeah, also the thought, especially if you continue to use this world in other campaigns without us, which is a sad thought, but also we live in it.
Blasphemous, actually. You may only play D&D with us. Forever and always.
But we still live, since we helped create that world, we live in it eternally. Because like, as Mills said, you know, I helped, I wrote a lot of the names of the Ulfair families, at least in the autumnal court. So if you were to ever do this on a future podcast and I hear you talk about the V family or the Shaw family or anything like that, I'd be like, hey, I wrote that. That's cool. That's me. I'm yeah. there. And I don't know. It just living eternally in that story is very cool in that way, especially with our characters being folk heroes. I feel like we deserve at least a cameo in any yeah. future campaign we do.
And I'm also thinking, like, and I don't know if any of our listeners, I know you are, Han, but are like familiar with Starlight Tales, which is a channel that I appear on occasionally and a lot of my friends are in. But like, they essentially wrote pages and pages like of lore, of planets, of gods, of an entire galaxy system. And all of, like, it's ridiculously in depth. And all of their campaigns are situated in there with one time or another. And I really like that idea, and I like that concept, and I like the idea of just having this world that is less centralized, and it's just something I can sort of carry around and tweak and get input from other people. And it, like you said, it carries the marks of all the people who have played in it in one way or another.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I love also how we've been able to create settings. I mean, Marcos's monastery and the wizard tower, it's all, they're places that feel very lived in, and because they're designed by the most important character associated with them, which is ourselves. And, you know, if the idea that you're going to like, oh, we for some reason have to go to the monastery just outside of Forlorn in the future campaign, it's like, oh, I built that, you know?
Yeah, kind of speaking of building, there, I think we wanted to touch a little bit more on character building. So as we've been talking about previously, this campaign is different in that we are not creating, we are not starting off with level one or level three players. We are starting off with, I shouldn't say levels because that's not what the system is, but I think they're ranks in this game, so rank...
Like legendary heroes.
Yeah, so, like, they're literally called, like, you know, novice, you know, veteran, seasoned, whatever. Instead of starting at the bottom, we're starting at the top. So, this question specifically says, what's it like playing a character at the beginning of the end of their story / the world? How differently did you have to approach the character creation and approach player character relationships with adventurers who have known each other for so long prior to playing? We also have specific anecdote for that. But I'll speak a little bit on character building. You definitely, with this sort of thing, you kind of have to think about, especially like in this TTRPG setting, you have to think about the character arc that happened before this story. So like usually with beginner characters, you just have a little bit of their backstory. Oh, they're from this village and they liked swinging a sword around once and they, you know, defeated a little robber in their local tavern. So now they really liked it. And now they're going to be an adventurer. But with this, you know, scope of story, you have to think about everything that that started there, that led to how they became this crazy, you know, mythical folklore hero, and what their goals were, if they accomplished those goals, if they have more goals after that, like motivations and what keeps them going, and what they're kind of doing all of this for, and if they were able to accomplish that before, or if they're still aiming to accomplish that. So it's a lot more focused on the backstory, I guess. But then at the same time, you also have to find the arc after the arc. You have to, I remember I talked about this with Rob a little bit. We were concerned about, oh, well, if this is the end of their story, how are they going to grow as characters? But, you know, your life never stops, even after you do something monumental. Like, even in a decline, there is still an arc there. You just have to find it. You just have to make sure that your character is dimensional enough in order to accomplish that sort of arc and to make the story interesting, because characters are what move a story. Character arcs are what make a story interesting because we relate to them. But yeah, that's my take on it. I just kind of rambled for a second, but...
Oh, that was great.
Thank you.
Brennan, what were your thoughts when designing Arcos to the vein of this question?
I was sitting there still. You caught me right before I know how to phrase this. I was really trying to figure out the best way. So, So part of the answer is in the future question about my -4 int characters. I'll leave that part of it out. But I work with a lot of I work at a religious institution, and I really love. I think there's a lot of interesting facets to it. Part of it is you get to see a lot of the flaws, and I think in a very narrow way of looking at things. And it's there's a lot of tension, I think, between me and some of my coworkers in the way that we look at the world and how we relate to it. But there's a lot of sometimes there's some redeeming qualities, sometimes there's some beauty there, and Arcos as a character is my way to mentally play out the conflict of, I think, a lot of really traditional views on religion and my own way of making my way through it. So it's kind of a lens that, that I deal with, you know, my personal life in the constant theology that I'm around with my institution. Of course, I love the work that I do, but just part of dealing with that. At the same time, I was reading a book that some of my friends read in college that was about some... it was for the honors program at TU about some monks, some like Catholic monks that survived the apocalypse. It's called The Canticle for Leibowitz. And I was just really inspired by like, oh, that's really interesting because we have a really apocalyptic world-ending theme for this whole thing. We're literally starting this whole thing off at the end of the world. And so I'm like, okay, well, the two ideas just kind of merged. So both Arcos' first and last name is taken from characters of that book. That's where it came out. It just kind of made sense. And just exploring, I guess, the right way, I think, that you can be morally upstanding and also have the continue on with the tradition of what his belief system is. I don't know if it's going to come to a good answer or not, but that's where the questions started coming about. It's how can I play a character who embodies these questions I'm having?
Yeah, it's not lost on me that you play this like monumentally important religious figure who is like very powerful and like smites the foes of your institution, but at the same time is in a lot of ways very ignorant to like the true theology behind what you're fighting for, which I think is a very it was very subtly done throughout the course of the season thus far, but I think is very interesting.
Thank you.
My relationship to creating a level 20 character was to get fucking goofy with it. I wanted to be able to just like have fun, and when I heard I could be a level 20 character, I was like, well, Wizard instantly is like the best bang for your buck in terms of what you could do
and godlike power.
Yeah, I was like, I might as well just like get as close as I can to being truly like busted. But the way that power corrupts, y'all, and the thing is, like, when you start there with the premise for your character but you still want to be like not evil, you have to really play the line between, like, you know, Amelia mentioned earlier, it's like when you say one thing is true in the lore, then you have a lot of questions of like what else must be true if that one thing's true. And it's like, if Magnus is this sort of morally gray trickster god inspired powerful wizard, like what is this person's life like? And the answer we sort of arrived to was like, not all that heroic. Like, he does very important things that like tend to have good consequences, like from a big picture perspective. Like, it is good that Magnus occasionally stirs shit up, and it's good that he takes powerful foes off the board. I am not really that convinced in myself that like Magnus at this level of power was really a good person, and that's sort of become his whole character flaw arc, and like why the deal he made to like basically not die a mortal death and be like immortalized as like a story is like such a problem for him, because he's now realizing as an adult, like, oh, I led a really shit ass life, and most people that know me don't like me and don't like know that I'm famous and actively do not want to see me in their town lest I burn it down, which is a not good way to be immortalized as a story and a vibe. And so, like, starting at the place of really powerful wizard and then, like, what would this guy's life have been like to get to that point? It's like, oh, there's some uncomfortable conclusions about how Magnus operated. So, yeah, it's interesting. I sort of made myself a not hero by being given that opportunity to start a character at that high of a level.
Yeah. I love hearing you guys talk about your characters.
You seem to give a thought.
No, I do. I was also thinking on, I didn't like want to interrupt, but I was also thinking what Brendan mentioned about like church and religion and how a lot of like building this world for me has also been trying to think about like my relationship to religion and what functions religion serve as a concept. both for, you know, what people lean on personally, tools of political power, and then also, but the gods are real. Like, they are very real and, like, present, and they're smiting shit and giving people magic. Like, and, like, how that changes the things. But, yeah, I just, and I don't know, I think hearing you guys talk about the characters and how, like, and what I wanted, I guess, for you guys to, like, as I really like thought experiments and things like that, is how doing something at the end really does change how you approach character creation and all of that. And I think it was a fun thing for me as a DM to try and figure out the story that happens after a story. And I'm glad you guys enjoyed that too.
See, the whole concept of you talking about, like, things in relationship to each other and, like, you know, fantasy or I guess fictional concepts, as opposed to how they exist in the real world, that very much is, like, such a good indicator of, like, thought being put into a story, because I often get so frustrated with fiction, like, either TV shows or books or whatever, and the best way I can illustrate this is through the movie Elemental, and I think this scene that I'm about to talk about happens in one of the trailers, so you've probably seen it even if you haven't seen the movie. But there's a point where they're like, I think there's a chain link fence, and they walk straight through it, and they're like, what do we even have these for? And I'm like, that's such a great point. You wouldn't have those because they don't work. Like, you're just trying to copy the existing world, even though it really doesn't make sense in the context of what you're, like, what this world that you've created. So I think that's such a great way to approach storytelling, thinking about things in relationship to each other and taking into account that, like, our reality, if you're trying to set up a fictional magical concept, you have to accept that the way that the world has evolved would be just fundamentally different than the world that we live in today. Like, if magic was real.
It's like the champagne problem.
The champagne problem? I think, yeah, Taylor Swift, like, whenever you say that.
Yeah, I didn't even put that together. No, like, the thing in fantasy worlds where it's like, you know, in a fantasy world, they're, like, drinking champagne. It's like, it's called champagne because it's from the Champagne era of France. And it's like, but, like, I always love hearing people come up with their dumb reasons. It's, like, named after, like, William P. Champagne, made bubbly juice, and things like that. Like, and it's not, like, a problem in that specific sense, but that's, like, a very simplified version of it's like how you can't think of, like, most expletives are just based in religion, like God damn it,
right?
Or
yeah.
Like ego, like every single thing is a minced what is it, a minced curse? But yeah,
so it was just a thought I had. Go ahead.
And the other part of that question that I wanted to get into from a GM perspective of, like, creating lore and character creations, there's this thing called Reunion, and whenever this drops, if someone in the Discord tags me, I'll drop a link to it, that I found when I was playing in a Die RPG session, and I really want to run something in Die RPG. It's an isekai RPG. So the idea, like, so just to give you a little background on Die, which is how you get here, is Die RPG, you are a group of people who have come together to play a TTRPG, and then your characters, I played it in beta, I think they called players and paragons or something, like your persona and your paragon. Your persona is a regular person in the real world. Their TTRPG character is their paragon, and they get sucked in, and there's all these different character classes, and it's great, and it's really cool. But the way the story tees up is you're a group of people who've already been playing, your personas have already been playing together, you're coming back for, like, one last game, that kind of thing. We're starting after a long time. So it's a series of questions that everyone goes around the table and kind of asks of them. Like, one question will ask a player something, and then it will, or one card will ask a player a question, and then it will prompt that player to ask another player about their own character. So it allows you to talk about your lore, but also to see how your characters are seen through and are interacted with through the characters of others. And through that, we got some pieces of lore that have stuck through to the campaign. and except for, like, modern day things, but it also just kind of allows you to get in that mindset of, like, building lore and stories of, like, what happened at the old flour mill. Which is like kind of a broad question, but then you can figure out what it is. And then you already have a backstory and a reference to go off of.
Yeah, it's a, like a very like useful modification of a lot of similar like improv acting games exercises of just like vague hook and then like improvise the history and the story of this.
Yeah, it's super helpful for having characters who have known each other for as long as ours have, because then you fill that, like, you have your own singular backstories, but then you have the, you know, the meshed backstory of like the history of all three of us in our case together, and it makes it feel fleshed out because we have those stories that we took from the game we played that none of you heard. So it's new surprises for the listener, or you know, just fun reference if you're just playing a home game, but it just makes it feel more real.
Yeah. And I think even then, even though it wasn't in character, like, there were points when you guys would start riffing in character.
Yeah.
That, like, creating those shared pieces of lore, you really figured out what the dynamic was before we even hit record or even had, right, like, interactions, which I think was really good.
Yeah. Okay, so the last kind of big discussion question that I think we're going to do for this Q&A. Do you have something that you've taken / something you learned or an idea you had from a previous game that you are trying to apply this season? And I can kind of answer if everyone else needs to think about this.
I'd love time to think.
Okay, cool. So my past two, so this podcast has really been my only experience with like long campaigns. I was in another podcast called SCP Play, but it was kind of cut off short. That being my only other long campaign experience. So really the only characters I have to, or really the only experience I have to draw from are those campaigns. And I, my characters have really kind of gone all over the place, especially jumping from Sinead to Akala. With Sinead, I tried to be very improvisational, tried to be very unplanned and spontaneous because that's who she was. She was a 15-year-old who was a pirate and didn't follow any rules. And I didn't set up a whole lot of backstory beats for her to kind of follow up on during the campaign. But Akala was like the complete opposite of that. Her story was so like simultaneously planned and unplanned and predictable and unpredictable that I was like, by the end of the campaign, I was wound up so tight that I wanted to make sure that every like little story beat went right. So with Winnie, I've very much like, as I've said previously, I think I said in the first episode of this, I'm very much a planner. I did improv and stuff when I was younger, but like as I've grown up and as I've gotten a 9-to-5 job, I've very much had to organize my life. I like to have information on things before I act on them. So I've been really trying with Winnie. I did set up those same dramatic beats that I kind of did with Akala, but at the same time, I've been trying to let myself not get wound up so tight with making sure that everything goes the way I want it to. And I think I've been achieving that so far. I think she's been a pretty good mix of mix from season 3. a pretty good mix of both Sinead and Akala, where she's like not as wound tight as Akala, but she's also not quite as spontaneous and rule free as Sinead. So I guess just trying to better myself as a TTRPG player and an improv player, I guess. That has been kind of my goal, and also just kind of playing a wide scope of characters for this has been kind of a goal. I think I answered the question. Does anyone else have anything to say? I don't know how to close my thoughts a lot of times, so someone else go.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that I'd answer this question is that I feel like between the last time I played an actual D&D character as a player, which was like 3 years ago at the beginning of, or like when did season 2 end? 2 years ago?
2019? Let me look.
So like 3 years ago, basically, was the last time I like played in a campaign before the start of this campaign with Arthur. And even then, Arthur was like my second D&D character, or like TTRPG character
2021.
Ever. And then 2021. Yeah. So 2 years. And I've since now like played in like a few one shots and just more succinct campaigns where I've had to like design characters just like more quickly or just like more casually, like not for a performance based podcast. And just getting more experience playing D&D, I sort of found a comfort zone of like where I like to be when I'm improving a character. And so like my insight, and this doesn't really surprise me in retrospect, just like having done, like just dabbled in a lot of like different artistic art forms, is that when you start doing something, you really want to like do it big, as I guess is my experience. Like you really want to like really shoot for the moon, and D&D is not an exception. And I think a lot of people feel that when they design characters the first like 3 or 4 times, they're like, my character is going to have this crazy backstory and like, you know, have all these dark dramatic things happening, and like it can feel very cluttered and like not well thought out. And so over time what I realized is like the best way to sort of do it, in my, you know, opinion, is to like really theme out your characters, which I started doing for the Star Wars season 3, where like I had to start thinking of characters like much more utilitarian, like what is the purpose of this character, like why is it in the story? And then as a PC, it's like you can sort of think about like, what is my character's theme? What like narrative trope do they fit into? And tropes are also really useful, is another thing that I have learned, is that as much as you want to like avoid trope characters, like the tropes exist for a reason, and as a starting place are often very good, even when you like switch them up. But yeah, just like having consistent themes and character ideas and not trying to do too much and then like letting the character grow organically. I try to do a lot with Magnus. So yeah.
Something that I've taken from previous campaigns, a lot of previous campaigns that I'm trying to get away from, is looking at my character as a piece of the party and to play more of a support role. Partially because class-wise, I'm a healer. If we were playing D&D 5e, I'd be a cleric. And just in general, like, Rama was very much a rogue, not by class, but, you know, play by his own rules kind of guy, borderline obstructive in the first 10 episodes. Certainly not an asset, except when guns were blazing. But when guns were blazing, that DPS was fucking incredible. But still, when guns were not ablazing and there was no DPS to be had, Ramos, it's like, ugh. You know, with Giuseppe as a character, that was part of the story, right? Was, I think the way that Q put it really well in the story with Giuseppe was, what happens when the pawn gets to the other side of board becomes the most powerful piece in the game, you know, the queen. And that was kind of the idea of it, was you had to get this dead weight to become something useful, something of an asset. And then, you know, Darnell was not always a team player either. So I'm like, you know, you can make, so trying to make a character who isn't like the main character that the whole thing's centered around, who could be, but in this particular instance is meant to heal the wounds of those around him and to learn from others and to mend his own flaws as more of a character who's supposed to be an asset to the team. So that's what I've been trying to work on a little bit this season. And one of his, like, Arcos's strengths is, you know, connections, right? Like, Arcos brought Askarath into the story, and if that's all he does, that's still a hell of an asset. Or healing the hangovers whenever we get drunk. I mean, being able to...
That is your most valuable skill.
Being able to be a contributing factor to the health and well-being of those around them. Even if you really want to bonk them over the head sometimes, and that's what I've been trying to focus on.
Mills, do you have anything to contribute?
I think... yeah, I'm in a different perspective because now I'm coming from having played in each one of you's games. And so one of the things that I just wanted to do, I've loved all the characters and that I've made and being able to explore your world. So there's just a part of me that's like, well, I'm just kind of paying that forward because I want you guys to have as much fun in my world as I did in yours. But I think the approach to lore and giving up some of the reins and letting you guys have a pronounced impact on like the world and on how things work, because my like gut reaction a lot of the time to things is that's not how it works, that's not how it functions. But like as I said earlier, and I do believe that, I think when you do collaborative storytelling, it does make the stories better. I think more perspectives make it richer. And I think being able to have you guys take the things that you care about and build them out with that kind of love and attention to detail, I really enjoy having that be a part of the process and a part of the lore. So that's something that I've really wanted to make sure that you guys get the ability to build that, but then it also feels cohesive, so it's not just like four different worlds that are all like mashed together, but that they're really synergizing. And then otherwise, this has definitely been an exercise in planning. Like I said multiple times, this is the longest produced piece I've DM'd. The only other thing that comes close to an episode length was my roguelike, which was literally the same thing over and over again. And so it was like very different perspective. And like when I was DMing on Unprepared Casters, that was a very concise story arc. And so I think one of the things I've been trying to pay attention to is like getting you guys lore and information and keep the story moving, but not having it feel too rushed. I like to sit in things and take a leisurely pace, but I just want to make sure it's interesting. So those are the things that I've been considering.
I'm just wondering when you're going to pull out the, what is it? The panda dance from the game plan movie? Is that what it was? Something like that?
No, it's from The Pacifier.
The Pacifier. Yeah. That movie.
Yeah, this definitely, like, totally also is probably more serious than my other games. There's less just random, like, there's bullshit here, but yeah, there's not yet a Peter Panda dance.
Peter Panda dance, that's what it was. So that was kind of our last big discussion question. So let's move on to the less serious stuff. And this episode's going to go a little bit longer than the last one, since I was mostly worried about having enough content for both, but we definitely do. So,
Rapid fire.
Rob, what is the physical description of Telecat, otherwise known as Alfie?
Alfalfa, my baby. little schmuckums. So Alfalfa is, a void cat. That's not a real species in lore. It is now, and forever will be.
They're rare, but they are there.
Yes. So basically what Alfalfa looks like is just like a normal sized all black cat. So, you know, like foot and a half long, a little bit chunky, but sleek, all black fur. Alfalfa's eyes mimic Magnus's eyes in that they are purple, and instead of like normal dot pupils, they are crosses, because he's his bound familiar. And his teleportation is between shadows, void, you know. So his tail, whenever he's like sitting in a patch of darkness, doesn't sort of end, it just sort of trails off into shadow. Like it just blends into the shadows. So it kind of gives the illusion that his tail is like infinite, even though it's like not necessarily. But that's my kitty.
Love that.
Little baby. He's not unusually small. I know the person asked that. No, it's not. He's not like tiny. He's not like a teacup kitten. He's like a normal cat.
Oh, that would be really cute though.
Maybe you'll have kittens. I don't know.
Love Alfalfa. Okay, so if your character was a Twitch streamer, what game do you think they would be streaming? I don't think Winnie would stream a game. I think she would do IRL. She would be an IRL streamer, and she would do gardening.
Nice.
Arcos would be building cathedrals on Minecraft.
That's such a good answer.
Like, for no audience, by the way.
Yeah, zero viewers. Meanwhile, this is so okay, cool. So here's the headcanon I have. Arcos would have all the whole setup, the whole Twitch, like, all the layouts, all the fancy shit, all the transitions, all the alerts, all that stuff. Zero viewers. One viewer, maybe. And then Winnie would just have her iPhone out like this, being like, here are my tomatoes. Here's my basil. Like, really shaky.
And you're looking at the screen and not at the camera.
Yeah, looking at the screen, not at the camera, and she would have thousands of viewers.
That's exactly how it would go.
God, I don't know. What would Magda stream on Twitch? Something toxic, probably. Like, he might...
Fortnite. COD.
No, that's like too basic.
Magda would... definitely play League.
Yeah, he'd probably be like gold 3 in League or something like that. Like, I don't know. I don't play League.
That being said, Didier Magna is playing fucking Rocket League or something.
That is funny.
I think he would probably, like, so here's the thing. Like, Magnus, like, really isn't, like, I don't think he's really even that social. Like, he's friendly enough with the party, but, like, Magnus, by and large, like, doesn't have a good relationship with most of the populace. I think he would be much more, I think he would be, like, half League of Legends, super sweaty, really serious, rushing bot lanes, and then, like, the other half would be just, like, cryptic Instagram posts with, like, anonymous masks. Like, it would just be, like, a bunch of vague shit. Like, meet at the cloister in, you know, 2 days. And then he just wouldn't show up and just forget about it. So he would, like, have people, like, go about doing shit, and then he just would totally blow it off.
I do love the idea of Julian being super popular on, like, TikTok or something. Yeah. And then every now and then, Magnus is, like, in the background of a video, or Julian, like, has, like, crotch shots of Magnus. And they're like, how are you with, like, how do you know this man? That's, like, one of the most powerful wizards ever. And then every single time, Julian's like, I don't want to talk about it. Like, don't worry about it. It's like,
that's for a story time, like, YouTube video.
Like Francesca Scorsese, like, occasionally yeah. just having her dad ask and asking him questions about memes.
Oh my god, that's so good. What would Craig stream?
Oh my god. I imagine Craig is, like, absolutely insane at, like, Overwatch or something.
That's also it's what I was
Overwatch?
Thinking.
Like, and it's just him, like, sitting there with a thing, like, no personality, but yeah. everyone's, like, thirsting over him. Yeah. And he's just really good.
Yeah. Amazing.
Not Craig and Julian being, like, TikTok hot boys. That's terrible.
Oh, my God.
What a horrid fate. I'm sure Magnus would hate that.
Collapse. Like,
why are you dancing without any music?
The music's in the phone. It's there.
But what's the point of dancing if you can't hear it?
It's for a trend. It's like do you know what a meme is, Magnus?
A meme? Is this some sort of spell?
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
I haven't heard of it. Teach me what a meme is, quick.
Winnie would use Feywild magic to make it look like they have filters on, but, like, it's real. On while they're doing their TikTok dance.
Yeah, putting, like, an actual bunny ear.
Or making them, like, actually sparkle. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think... I'm trying to think. I imagine Huron is just playing, like, Agario and things like that. Because, like, that's as complex of a video game as he can handle.
Yeah.
Or chess. And just, like...
Like, online yeah. chess. Chess.com or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I fully think Azkarath is spending 4 hours minimum making their character for Baldur's Gate. Like, and I like to think Azkarath's stream has, like, they're, like, one of those streamers who's been around for a while and has a pretty steady following, so they can, like, go to platform and they're, like, very just, like, it's solid, it's nothing yeah. crazy or showy, but it's good and it's great content, great commentary, and a solid community.
I love that for her.
And a problematic ex. It's got everything. Got everything a growing streamer girl needs.
The Church yeah. of Fury teaches you how to stream on Twitch before you graduate from school.
Yeah, it's like LDS and mommy bloggers.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, to get more people to join, yeah.
That's hilarious.
All right, we spent some time trying to figure out what the reference was before we started recording for this next question. Can Brennan describe his ideal sexy cave?
I don't know what that's about.
We figured it was probably from season 3, but we still don't really know.
I'm pretty sure it's season... The thing is that we spent a lot of time in a cave-like environment in season 3, which did have some of my favorite scenes ever. On this podcast. But I don't know why I'd be describing the cave is the weird thing. And I can't picture me being like, oh yeah, is that a sexy cave?
You know? The thing is, I feel like I would describe a cave as sexy.
Yeah.
Like, if any right. of us are going to say something about a cave as right. sexy, it's me.
Yeah.
Not my usual vernacular. So it could have been season 2, although I can't remember we're in a cave. So to answer the question, although I would love to.
Yeah, you've been dancing around it for a while. Sexy cave. Go on the record.
I've got no memory of talking about a sexy cave.
It doesn't matter the context right now.
But I picture a cave where it looks like a maw, you know, when there's like, for some reason, stalactites on top and stalagmites on bottom. And they're like teeth, like jaws, and it's just like coming up from the ground. And there's just darkness behind it. And then there's like a little hole. And then you go through it and it's like all lit up. You know, there's like bioluminescent creatures in there.
There's definitely running water in the back.
Definitely.
Definitely.
There's Maxi Mule with a bunch of roses waiting for
you. Andigo.
Andigo.
Yes.
There are my favorite romances in all seasons of this podcast.
The most powerful throuple.
The ones that got away.
Yeah, there's definitely going to drop the adventures of Digo and Rama sometime for my own personal fanfic.
Yeah, but that's their domestic partnership game. Raising a sentient robot.
Oh man,
it's Rama. It's like Brokeback Mountain, except in space.
Perfect. Okay, this next one's hard, and I spent some time thinking about it. And I think I have a good answer. What movie, in your opinion, is a perfect 5 out of 10? Not a bad movie, but not exactly good either. The perfect meh movie.
The Mummy.
I keep looking at that one, and I can't think of one.
Did you say The Mummy is a 5 out of 10?
There's just a few things about it.
No,
I just can't get behind. Yeah.
Try again.
Fuck you.
I haven't actually seen it, so I wouldn't know. I've done the ride.
Oh, you would love The Mummy. You're so bisexual.
True.
I really enjoyed The Mummy. There's a few things that was just a bit.
Really enjoyed translates to a 5 out of 10?
There's a few things that were weird. There's just a few things that was whack.
My answer is the 5th Harry Potter movie. Firstly, because it's the 5th Harry Potter movie, but also because it's just one of the weaker links. Like, the first 3 Harry Potter movies, great stuff. Good shit. Also, not to Harry Potter post on Maine, but like, because, you know, dead, whatever. But, you know, it's just like it was the height of Daniel Radcliffe's like drug problem. And all I really remember is just the face that he makes through the whole movie. And I just feel like that all the other ones are stronger. But like it's like kind of one that you have to get through if you want to watch all the Harry Potter movies, which I have not watched in a long time. But like that's how I feel about it. A 5 out of 10.
That's valid. 5th Harry Potter movie is extremely mid.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're looking for. Extremely mid.
Okay. I think the only one that's coming to mind, because I also love bad movies. The problem is I keep thinking of movies that are like I love bad movies that are good, and I keep thinking of bad movies that are bad.
Right.
Like I think I would give Brigadoon maybe a 4 out of 10. It might be a 5 out of 10 just for the concept, but that was a boring ass movie. The one that I'm thinking of for real though, no one here has seen Brigadoon. Don't watch it. It's fine. It's no Schmigadoon, that's for sure.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. That's the one that you liked, right?
No, Schmigadoon is 1 billion out of 10, and it's also a TV series.
Right.
Brigadoon is a musical from the 50s that Schmigadoon draws some parallels with.
Gotcha.
But Schmigadoon's also referencing to all the musical, like Rodgers and Hammerstein, like that era of musicals.
Oh, I should watch that.
Everyone should watch Schmigadoon. It's on Apple TV. It's great. It fills the hole that Galvant left in my life. Anyway, my 5 out of 10
all of
movie.
That just sounded so alien. Like I landed on an alien planet.
Not Schmigadoon.
Like,
Schmigadoon.
Best... Yes. What are the movies I should watch? Just make sure you watch Schmigadoon. Stay away from Brigadoon. And if you hear about Flagadoon, no. Just go in the other direction.
Yeah, well, you don't want to watch that one for sure.
Okay, but the first season is Schmigadoon, but then the second season is Schmicago.
It just sounds so made up.
Rob and I are in the fucking Twilight Zone right now. Where's the candy camera?
No, Schmicago is so good, but you should watch. I started with Schmicago. I watched the first few episodes they were out, and then I went back to Schmigadoon, but you should watch the whole thing.
Definitely Rick and Morty.
If I had to say...
Schmicago made my voice hit registers I didn't know could hit.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I was also thinking I was gonna just say another sentence just to mess with Rob. which is that Schmacago is great because it has a narrator, which is Titus Burgess, the guy who plays Titus Andromeda from the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh,
yes. Cool.
Okay, there we go.
It's more words.
I recognize some of those words.
Great band, great play.
My 5 out of 10 movie, I would say, is Sharknado 2. And here's why I'm giving Sharknado 2 a 5 out of 10. The first Sharknado was a fun time. It was a great concept. Now, it's so dumb, and I love shark movies, so obviously I'm going to rank the first Sharknado high because I like bad movies. And we're asking for ratings, which is an opinion, so I don't want people coming in here and telling me that it's not a good shark movie because it's a great bad shark movie. I've watched awful bad shark movies that are on Amazon Prime that looked like they were made for some, like, random film project for, like, a sophomore second semester.
Santa like, Jaws. Have you heard of Santa Jaws?
Oh, my God. But the reason why I'm giving Sharknado 2 a 5 out of 10 is because I'd give the first Sharknado a higher ranking. There's like 5. At some point, I stopped watching Sharknado movies because they did, no pun intended, jump the shark. However, at some point, we have to start ranking them lower. And the thing is, I've watched Sharknado 1 through 3. I have no idea what happens in Sharknado 2. I could not tell you. I have 100% seen that movie. And for that reason, I'm giving it a 5 out of 10. Because if it were so awful, like if it were like Virus Shark, I would remember exactly why it was so bad that I would be going a rant about how much I hate the movie. But the fact that I don't remember anything about it means that it was probably just a 5 out of 10. It was a movie. It existed. That's it. Sharknado 2 specifically.
Rob, do you have an answer? Do you want to move on?
Oh yeah, all right. I'm gonna give you a twofer. I think both Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame are both extremely mid 5 out of 10 movies.
I have to disagree with Infinity War, but Endgame, yes, I agree with.
Yeah. Just Marvel really fell off the wagon. Thanos has dumb motivations.
Yeah, I've always had a problem with
kill
that
exactly
too.
50% of everyone. That'll solve everything.
Why? And he's like, don't ask me that question. This is a Marvel movie. It's like, what?
What's wild is that Thanos' motivation in the comics is actually kind of wild, and I think Mills, you in particular, would appreciate it. His whole thing is that he's like this like sort of demigod alien, and he like has an affair with the literal like embodiment of death.
That's what I was about to say. I was literally going to go on a little rant about how the meaning there in the comics is so much better because it makes more sense.
Yeah.
And then the funny thing is death is still like, yo. I didn't want that. And also death had the thing for Deadpool, which is also objectively funnier.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So anyway.
A god with the power to kill half the universe or... one undead cancer boy.
That looks like an avocado.
One wacky Ryan Reynolds.
So this one is specifically for Brennan. What is your interest in playing -4 intelligence characters? They're great and I love them. Says the person.
Saying you love them. There's two things behind it. One of them is I really like redemption arcs or having characters that start out one place and end up someplace else, you know? That wasn't necessarily the case with Dartle, but which Seppo, it goes back to Mills' comment about getting a pawn to the other side of the board. And just insufferable as Giuseppo is in the beginning, you know, I think there at the end there's a lot of redeeming qualities who shows true leadership after enough pep talks from Q and enough inspiration from Sinead and enough encouragement from Arthur. And having a character that's deeply flawed and having it that character grow over time because of the positive influences or negative ones of your friends is just something that I can't get enough of. It's something I really enjoy. And Int is usually one of the easier ones to play up as the dump stat as a way to have growth. I will say, the other thing is sometimes I'm trying to satirize something. Like, Rava's name is just a name for king in Thai. My family's from Thailand, my father's side is. And the king did a bunch of really fucked up shit during the pandemic. He, like, just straight up left the country and all his responsibilities and set up shop at a resort in Germany. And it was just funny to make fun of him as a bungling idiot like Rama was in the beginning. And similarly with Arcos lampooning some of the funnier shit that I hear of people who are a little bit up their own ass when it comes to the way they approach theology. It's just like, what the fuck does that even mean? You know what I mean? So being able to make fun of it with the character is always funny. But you get these characters that are really, really dumb, or, you know, kind of not just stupid, but are problematic or foolish in some way. And as they learn more, it just makes, I think, a really fun story for me to tell through them, and showing that I think a lot of people, myself in particular, come from a place of ignorance. We're not born knowing everything. We have to learn. And playing up the foolishness I feel in my own life for being who I am, and the joy I feel as I learn more and become a better person and try to be, is something that I think is evoked really well when you're playing a game in a system where you can level up and when you can get better. And that sort of self-improvement, that redemption, is something I find very fascinating to play. And also sometimes it's just fucking funny, you know? Like, if we have a lot of serious characters, sometimes you have to break up the L and Akala tears with, God damn it, someone give me a shot of the Western juice. Yeah. sometimes
now forever calling whiskey Western juice.
sometimes they're talking about the Shadow Realm and you need something to say, hey, Yugi, you know?
Also, it's easier to play low intelligence characters because then you don't have the pressure to feel smart in everything you do.
Yeah.
That's why I'll never play a smart character ever again. Well, that's very well said. This is our last question that we have, kind of a lighter question just for fun. I know you guys play remotely because Hannah's across the country and Rob lives in the shadow of the young eldritch god named Gritty, but if you guys do roll real-life dice, can you describe the sets you use for your character? So in the past, I've not been very intentional with the dice that I've used for Akla. I think I just used some handmade ones that I bought off of a seller on Instagram. But for Winnie, I made a little set, and I'll, if someone tags me in Discord, I will remember to share it. But I have a bunch of, like, different colored sets, and I put a bunch of them together. Like, I have some blue dice, I have some, what is this, hollow dice, I guess? The ones that are kind of shiny and do the different color thing. I have a blue D20, I have a purple D20 and a purple D12, and then I have a D6 that has some stars in it that's clear, and a white D10. And also with 7C, we had to just use D10s, so I was just grabbing whatever D10s I had, so I couldn't really curate for that. But, this is the first time I've really put thought into a set for a character. Anyone else?
I got three sets of dice. I got a crimson with gold lettering. I've got blue, like a transparent, really pretty sapphire blue with a yellow lettering. And then I've got a set with little mushrooms in them that I guess I got in divorce after my last breakup. And what I do is I just stick with one set, and then once one of them does me dirty, I just put them in dice jail and start with the next one. And then I start with that one on my next round. So I just rotate, you know, so.
I've been using the set for most of the campaign that my friends got me for my birthday. That is a metal set of dice that's made out of brass that's hollow. So instead of being like thick metal most of the way through, they're actually quite light, so they don't dent mats or your table or anything like that. And they've got little clockwork gears carved in between the numbers and the borders, which is sort of hard to show on camera. I don't know if it will really show up. Not that we're going to release the camera anyway. But and I just like these die because they're sort of mystical, but they're nice and shiny and look good and feel good in your hand. They're not too heavy, so.
I think mostly for this campaign, I'm using a set of dice that I would describe like metallic floral, but if those flowers were stabby and evil, belong to an eldritch god. And then another that's just like gray stone, that's pretty simple. And then, yeah, I think those are the two sets I used mostly for this campaign. Both were gifted to me. I like using dice that I've gotten as gifts because then I know who to blame if I'm wrong.
That's funny.
Very good. Okay, well, that wraps it up for all of our questions. I think we hit pretty much all of them, and we're over the 1 hour time, so that's great. So as we come to a close in this Q&A, I have been hyping up this announcement that I have been talking about at the beginning and the end of each of these episodes. So as time has kind of gone on, as our podcast has progressed through time and as our lives have changed through the years and the almost 5 years that we've been doing this, we're about to, we're about 4.5 years in right now. We have come to the conclusion that season 4 is going to be the last season of Guild Fellows. And I understand that might be really sad for a lot of you guys to hear. It was kind of a sad realization whenever we kind of came to that conclusion. And I'm really not going to harp on it a lot right now because if I talk about it too long and if I start a speech, I'm going to go on forever. And we'll have plenty of time for that after season 4 ends. I plan on having a season 4 postmortem and then a podcast postmortem after that. Basically, the biggest reasons being that as individuals, we are just kind of outgrowing the show a little bit. I'm sure most of you have noticed that we have been a little bit inconsistent with scheduling recently, and it's not because of that. This is not happening because of that. This is happening just kind of as a side effect of everything else that's been going on. We're just kind of outgrowing the show. And another reason being that we are of the belief that we should quit while we're ahead. You know, if you've watched a TV show for, like, I don't know how many years of your life, and eventually they get to the point where they're running out of ideas, and not that we're running out of ideas, but, like, you know, if this is something, if we were to continue past this point, it would just kind of become something that we're struggling to keep up with, something that might turn into something that we didn't originally mean the show to be. So 4 seasons is a great place to just kind of cut it. We each got a chance to DM. I have to stop talking. Otherwise, I'm going to continue and I'm not going to stop. And I have to stop. So I'm sorry. This is kind of a little bit of a somber note to end this Q&A on. But we will talk about it more. We still have a whole half a season. We just kind of wanted to give you guys some time to digest. We wanted to give ourselves time to digest. And we didn't want to just, you know, throw it on you at the end of season 4. So now we have time to kind of, you know, take it in and think about it and just really enjoy this last half a season that we have left. Maybe more than half a season. I'm not sure. But yeah, and I think I'm going to be short. And I told everyone else not to say much. So if everyone else is surprisingly silent in this moment, just know it's because I asked them to be. It's not because they don't care about the show. So, yeah, that being said, does anyone have anything short and sweet they want to say, or should I just end it off there?
Very briefly, I'll just say that I want anybody that is listening to this that is sad to know that we hope that you do not focus on, like, the sadness of this ending, but we hope that you appreciate as much as we have how cool of a journey this has been, and thank you so much for listening and continuing to listen and support us. And we love you very much.
Yeah, take it as something that, like, we're growing. We're not ending because we hate the show or anything like that. We're just growing as individuals and need to move on. And just know that it's going to open us up for bigger and better things, even though this thing has been really great for the past 4.5 years.
I just want to say that I'm very thankful to have been a part of this. I hope that I can get us to finish on a very high note. And I'll keep the stories with me forever. And I can't wait to see what all of us are going to do next.
Drunk stream reunion?
Maybe, perhaps. I'll keep the RSS feed up so it'll be here if we ever want to come back to it. But yeah, that's all I'm going to say. That's all we're going to say for now.
Thank you so much for listening to both of these Q&A episodes. And thank you all for just being listeners of the podcast. We could not have asked for any better outcome for any of this. And I'm just continually shocked that we're still here 4.5 years later, like genuinely. But that's all I'm gonna say. Thank you all so much for joining us today. We love you all so much. Stay safe. We love you. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.